This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. It has been an eventful Wednesday. The first hour, we tackled a bunch of CR stuff. The last hour, in case you missed it, I've been telling the story of the Philippine-American War, and I'm still not done yet. In fact, there's still some spicy stuff to go. As soon as I finish that, it may be shortly, and it may not be shortly. I'm not quite sure yet. We'll dig into a little bit of this Liz Cheney nonsense. Dome, we're going to have to laugh at Dome. She gave a speech. In fact, that's definitely where I'm going when I'm done with history. But right back to our story. In case you're just now joining us, I'm not going to recap everything for you. The Philippine-American War has kicked off. We kicked the Spanish out of the Philippines. The Filipinos understandably thought that meant we were going to hand the place back to them. We decided, hey, we like it here. And so we bought it off of the Spanish as part of the Treaty of Paris. Now we're fighting. Shots rang out. Americans died. Filipinos have died. And as I said, finishing up last hour, head-to-head confrontation against Americans is generally a bad idea. We not only have the wealth as a nation to equip our people better than others, we simply love firearms. I joined the Marines at 19. I'd been shooting guns for a decade. And yes, while there were guys who joined who didn't have any familiarity with firearms, and they'll teach you. Remember, if that's you and you're thinking about it, they'll teach you. They'll teach you everything you need to know. For the most part, everyone there had held them, used them, hunted, done things with them. Americans are good at fighting. We fought head-to-head with the Filipinos, and we beat the living crap out of them. So they did the only thing they could do. I'll tell you, I'm probably going to offend everybody here, and then I'm going to defend the Filipinos, and I'm going to defend the Americans. History's complicated. War is complicated. Things are ugly. Not everything's black and white. Oh, evil Americans. I'm sure that's what you've all been taught about the Philippine-American War. We were winning. We were doing well. Back home, the winning part was chafing on people. It looked like we were beating up on poor people, on people who couldn't fight back or couldn't fight back as well. We looked like we were now a colonial power. And some stories were starting to get printed in the press that were not landing well with the American public. I'm going to be very delicate with how I describe this next thing, but I do want to bring it up because it is shockingly consistent in the stories I read. There were all kinds of temperance units, Christian temperance groups, I should say, and what they wanted was a righteous society, a more Christian society. And there were all kinds of women's groups and things like that that were pushing that stuff. And the stories started to filter back home that American troops were acquiring some diseases. Not tuberculosis here, not malaria. Diseases, the kind of diseases you acquire when you are not conducting yourself the way you should conduct yourself with the opposite sex. Does that sound good? There are children listening. I don't want to put it any differently than that. That stuff did not land well back home. It sounded like our boys were being corrupted. We were doing terrible things. Again, this war was getting more and more controversial. Back to the Philippines. The Filipinos made the only decision they could. They abandoned conventional warfare tactics in the name of guerrilla warfare tactics. We cannot fight these people head to head. We're not going to put 1,000 of our troops up against 1,000 of theirs. We're just going to get slaughtered like we have been. We have to melt into the shadows. Now, let's discuss guerrilla warfare tactics, because these have been used many, many, many times throughout history against us, by others. I mean, you name it. Indians, Viet Cong, Americans have plenty of history fighting against this stuff. Guerrilla tactics mean you don't have the power to fight conventionally, so you fight unconventionally. That's how you describe it. When you're the guerrilla, you describe it as unconventional. And you do things like you raid a supply depot. You ambush a group of three soldiers when they're out. Maybe, usually, you do something horrific to those soldiers if you get your hands on them. This is very common in guerrilla warfare. Guerrilla warfare, because they're undermanned, they don't have the same equipment. They don't fight. I hate even using this word, but you'll understand what I mean. They don't fight fair, because they can't fight fair. If you are outmatched, you better not fight fair. So they don't. And it always works out this way. The guerrilla guys will start doing really dirty things and then disappearing into the population. That's the nature of guerrilla warfare. You slip out at night, put on your black pajamas, find an American soldier, kidnap him, skin him alive, hang him from a tree, and then you go back, put on your farmer peasant uniform, and you're just out there in the fields the next day. Guerrilla guys generally commit terrible atrocities, and almost always those atrocities lead to the bigger standing army getting angry about the lack of fairness and committing atrocities right back at them. And the Philippine-American War was no exception. If you do any reading on it at all you will read about are the atrocities we committed against them, because virtually all of our history in this country is written to make America look bad. However, there were plenty of atrocities to go around. We committed them, and they committed them. When they would get their hands on American troops, I've told you before, they'd kill our guys with ants. They would bury our guys alive. If they chose to keep you alive and keep you captive, they would oftentimes start chopping off your body parts. They would chop off your ears, chop off your nose. Imagine having your buddy kidnapped, taken prisoner. Maybe you miraculously get him back, and he shows up in your camp, and his nose and his ears have been chopped off, and that's how he has to sail back home to mom. Imagine finding your buddy having been buried alive. It creates anger and hatred. Guerrilla warfares always end up in deep, deep, deep hatred. We began waterboarding them. It was called water torture, the water method. It was called a bunch of different things. It was essentially just waterboarding. We were waterboarding them. We were torching too, beating them. There were allegations of rape, of all kinds of things. It was a horrible, horrible affair. Now, that leads us to a place, I mentioned it in the very beginning, called Balangiga. Balangiga. If you're yelling at me about how I pronounce that, there's nothing in the world more difficult to pronounce than Filipino names. It's very difficult. It just is. It's a hard language. Balangiga, although I'm pretty sure that's Spanish, and I habla. Balangiga was a place where our troops were quartered. Some of them. Not many. It's 40-some. Our troops got up one morning, and there were all kinds of Filipino workers who were in the camp. Sometimes they were forced to work. I want to make sure everyone's clear about that. So we were forcing them to work. We'd go into a village after one of our guys got killed, kill a bunch of people, grab a bunch of others. You're going to work the fields now. Either way, there's a bunch of Filipinos in this camp of ours. Our guys are sleepy. It's the morning time. They're walking over to get breakfast. And bong, bong, the church bells go off. And an ambush was set up ahead of time, obviously, and a bunch of Filipinos came pouring out of the church with machetes and knives, all kinds of bladed weapons, and our guys are slaughtered. They lost guys too, we lost guys too, but we lost the most. Our guys were unarmed, fighting with pots and pans. There are stories of our guys fighting with rocks. It had to be something straight out of a horror movie. Imagine walking to breakfast and soon you're in a knife fight and you've got a pot in your hand. That's how it was. And you can imagine how well that landed. The Marine general on the ground issued an order. Kill every male over the age of 10. And we began slaughtering the Filipinos. Well, a war that was unpopular back home before gets a whole lot less popular when you wake up and find of a bunch of American troops hacked to death and a bunch of Filipinos getting murdered in response to it. And I will wrap this up in just a moment, and then we'll go back and talk about some politics. How's that sound? Before we do that, let's talk about Pure Talk, the greatest cell phone company out there, because it's the patriotic one. It's so hard to find any genuine patriotism in the corporate world today. All these corporate types, they come up through this anti-American education system, and they get there, and they take your money, and they use it against your culture, your values. Can't turn on the TV anymore without a rainbow flag hitting you in the face. Pure Talk doesn't do any of that garbage. Pure Talk is a purely patriotic company. They love this place. They love our veterans. They care for our veterans. When Pure Talk gives back, they're getting veterans back on their feet, back into the world. It's going to be the exact same cell phone coverage you have now. My bill got cut in half. You're paying way too much. You can keep your phone, keep your number, or get brand new stuff. It's Christmas time. They make everything easy. So get a hold of them. You'll find the person on the other end of the line speaks English, and they're pleasant. #250 and say Jesse Kelly. That's all. Pick up your cell phone. Dial #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse
USA!
Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, sidetracking the entire show tonight to talk about history, which I will try to wrap up this segment. We'll get back and finish up some politics, maybe some emails, talking about the Philippine-American War. If you would like to email the show, love, hate, death threats, you're welcome to do so, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 877-377-4373. Now we have the Balangiga Massacre. Remember I told you the church bells were what signaled the Filipinos to attack? There were three of those bells. We seized those bells afterwards. Then we began killing people, a lot of them. Now back home, the war is supremely unpopular. It's crazy how many people haven't really heard about this war at all. You realize roughly the same number of American troops died in the Philippine-American War who died in Iraq? 4,000. That's how big this thing was. Think about Iraq. That's how big this thing was. And we're talking about a period of about 4 years. It was ugly. The generals who were over there killing people were called back home. They were court-martialed. Again, this was not well-received. Emilio Aguinaldo, the rebel leader, he eventually gets into our possession. America decided it doesn't quite have the stomach for conquest. We don't want our guys to die. We don't want to be seen as killing others. It's just not who we are. And we send over a man, a large man, by the name of William Howard Taft. William Howard Taft did not want to go over there and conquer a bunch of Filipinos. He didn't want to slaughter a bunch of people. And he began the process, we called it at the time, benevolent assimilation. We were building schools. We were trying something new. Around this time, remember, McKinley got killed. McKinley was an American president, got assassinated by an anarchist. They tend to do that kind of a thing. After we changed tactics and after we had won the combat portion of it, and remember, this was a long, 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 drawn-out, nasty guerrilla war. Different islands. I already told you there's several different islands. It was an ugly affair. Teddy Roosevelt takes over as president. We've tried something new, benevolent assimilation. The Filipinos decide in the end, that's a happy ending. See, this is the ugly story, but has a happy ending. The Filipinos decide we are done. We give up. We're turning ourselves in. We're done with this rebellion. But you should feel proud of yourself. Maybe you're not thrilled about this portion of American history. You could at least be happy about this portion of it. When they did that, we decided we were going to do things radically different. And up until the start of World War II, well, I'll put it this way. By the start of World War II, when the Japanese invaded and ran us out of the Philippines and those poor people were put under it again, we got along famously by then. That's how much we changed the trajectory of our relationship in the Philippines. We did it a completely different way. And obviously it wasn't perfect, but allowing them govern themselves. Let's make this a place of American-Filipino partnership, American-Filipino business. In fact, so many of MacArthur's troops on that Bataan Peninsula before the Bataan Death March, there were so many Filipino troops there. Why? Because we were training up and equipping the Filipino army. In a matter of 40 years, give or take, we had gone from slaughtering each other in the jungles to working closely, hand in hand, us building up their economy, them partnering with us. We had major GM. We had the movie theaters, very modern. Manila was supposed to be gorgeous by the time World War II rolled around. It wasn't that gorgeous by the time the Japanese were done with it. And we kind of helped a lot out with that. We had to root them out of there, so we kind of had to burn most of the place down. But before World War II, we and the Filipinos got along incredibly well. It ended up being a wonderful relationship. I won't say it lasts to this day, but it kind of does. Relations are always tense, but kind of to this day. And remember those church bells I told you? It's kind of a cool little tidbit here. After those church bells rang out and they massacred us with machetes and things like that, we took them. They remained in our possession of the U.S. Army, I believe, if I remember right. Had a couple of them spread out all over the place. And they began to chafe against that, wanting them back. You know, let's complete the reconciliation, want them back. Those are our church bells. Just a few years ago, in 2018, the United States of America finally returned the Balangiga bells to the Philippines. The Filipinos have their bells back, and we have completed the circle. And that is a very, very brief, believe it or not, even though it took me an hour and a half, that is a very, very brief version of the American-Philippine War, the Philippine-American War, the Philippine Insurrection. It's called a bunch of different things. You're going to have to do your own reading on it if you would like to know more. There's a bunch more to it. Again, it's guerrilla warfare. It's ugly. It's atrocities. It's one of the ones that I enjoyed the least. I've enjoyed learning about it the least. And now I've been reading and learning about it for a while, but it's just an ugly, ugly period of time. And there aren't a lot of people who come out of it looking great. And one of the reasons I despise it so much is it's virtually impossible to find any source on it that doesn't just describe us as complete unhinged barbarians the whole time. And it's probably not the best period of time for America, if I'm being totally frank. Yeah, Chris, I winced a little bit too when I was going through it. We're not the demons they make us out to be, but not our finest hour. Either way, that's the Philippine-America War. Let's go back to politics and make fun of Kamala Harris for a little while. That's always a good time. Before we do that, let's save a life. That was a lot of ugliness and death with ears getting chopped off and stuff. Well, that happens to babies every single day in this country. Every single day, babies are massacred in the United States of America. Lots of them. Do you know that you and preborn save 200 of them a day? 200 babies a day are saved with preborn's clinics. How do they do this? Well, they find these young women who are about to kill their baby, and they give them the gift of ultrasound for free. No charge to the woman. And they support her after if she needs help. She needs diapers. If she needs substance abuse. If she has to get away from an abusive spouse. Preborn's there. Up to 2 years of care. Now that is saving lives. changing lives. People walk the planet today because of what you and Preborn have done. And it's tax deductible. It's the end of the year. How about saving a life and writing it off on your taxes? Preborn.com/Jesse. $28 saves a life. Give as much as you can. Preborn.com/Jesse. Sponsored by Preborn. We'll be back.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so? Yeah. The Jesse Kelly Show.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
But you do want to be informed.
Can you be informed without being all of those other things? We think so. Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty, the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
If you shoot at us and we deflect it, it doesn't really count. And that just doesn't make any sense. You got to make a rule. Don't shoot at the United States.
Or if you prefer, Iran, blah, blah, blah.
America haters are winning. The would-be communists, the Marxists, are winning in America. And they're doing so openly, and nobody cares.
I think giving the downtrodden money enables them. They aren't getting the money. I'm winning.
Good Lord, that was the voice of the patriarchy right there, folks. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. I can't imagine anyone stuck around for that entire thing, but I enjoyed myself immensely. Remember, if you missed any part of the show, the politics of the first hour or the history of the rest of it, go download the whole thing, iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Jewish producer Chris told me he's going to separate out that history part into a separate thing at some point. It's not going to be done tonight. I'm not putting pressure on you, Chris. Okay, it's fine. Sorry, you might have to work more than 3 hours a day. Anyway, at some point in time, that will be done for you absolute history freaks. Now, Kamala Harris, she's back. She's starting to stick her head up again. You're starting to hear quotes about she wants to run again. She's not going away. We're starting to hear things floated out there, and that's exactly what they do. They get their people in the media, and they float these little trial balloons. Maybe I'll be governor of California. Maybe I'll run for president again. And so we are so blessed, because now you know what that means. That means we get more dome sound bites. Maybe you thought just because Trump crushed her like a grape in the election that we were never going to hear from her again. Does she seem like somebody capable of closing her mouth? No, she's not. So she's giving speeches. And, you know, there's something about growing as a human being. I want you to listen to this.
While our ideals are under assault. And now this fight to keep the light of America's promise and to ensure it burns bright. Well, this fight now, it continues with you. You are its heirs. We are its heirs.
Just hang on to that for a moment. I'm gonna play you one more here.
And I ask you to remember the context in which you exist. Yeah, I did that.
Have you ever complained about rich kids? Rich kids who grow up rich. Figures, rich kid. Why is that a stereotype? Rich kids. He's useless. He's an idiot. He's a rich kid. Or dumb blondes. Another dumb blonde, some hot blonde chick. Yeah, what a dumb blonde. You ever done that? Why do those stereotypes exist? Because there's some truth to them. Most stereotypes have some truth in them. That's why they make us uncomfortable, but that's why they got started, right? They don't come out of thin air. They come from somewhere. Why is a dumb blonde or a rich kid, why are they thought of as dumb or less capable? Or because they can be. It's not that women who are hot are dumb. It's that they get to a point in their life And there is no privilege in the world that supersedes hot chick privilege. If you are an attractive woman, doors simply open for you because, well, for obvious reasons, everyone wants to be around you. If you are a rich kid, daddy gave you a Lamborghini for your 16th birthday. You grew up with servants and mansions and things like that. You had everything handed to you. You just kind of stop advancing. And you end up halting wherever you were in life when you started getting handed things. That hot, dumb blonde, she was not always that way. As soon as she got old enough to not have to actually do anything to get invited to that wonderful boat party, well, she stopped developing any kind of a personality, stopped reading books. The rich kid, he didn't have to develop a work ethic. You know why Kamala Harris sounds like this?
While our ideals are under assault. And now this fight to keep the light of America's promise.
You know why she sounds like a 16-year-old girl trying to sound profound? Because that's what she is. Because she came up in the California political system where, A, you must be a Democrat to even walk in the door and hope to achieve major statewide success. You have to be a Democrat. Well, she checked that box. Remember, her father is a communist and a professor, but I repeat myself. So she came up in that California system where you have to be a Democrat. Box checked. But see, that's just to get in the door. After that, you have to go through some serious, some rigor. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to chop and hack your way up through the Democrat system unless you're black and a woman. You see, Kamala Harris came up in a Democrat state where being a Democrat black woman meant that she didn't ever have to become anything else. That was always enough. So there was never any fascination with the world or philosophy or how the world works. There was never this requirement to bust your butt at this job and earn your way to this job, because she never had to earn anything. She had to show up and say, I'm a Democrat, I'm a woman, and I'm black. And the media will not interrogate you. They're not going to tear apart your life. You can't do that to a saintly black woman. It's similar to, you know what? LeBron James is actually a great example of this. That basketball player, LeBron James, you know how he's such a moron and always sounds like such a moron and he gets made fun of all the time because he is always pictured reading these books, only it's always open to the first page. It's very clear he's never read anything at all. He's just an idiot. But why is he an idiot? Because he's 6'8 and 270 pounds and he runs like a gazelle and he's so great at basketball. He's never had to get to page two in the book. He never had to get to page two. So he's a moron and he'll always be a moron. He's I don't know how old he is. I guess he's 40. I'm guessing probably close to 40. He's 40 going on 15. Kamala Harris is 60 years old, about to be 17. And the next year after that, she'll be about to be 17. And the next year after that, she'll be about to be 17. And the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that. That's why she talks like this.
And I ask you to remember the context in which you exist.
What does that even mean? What an idiot. But man, we could have had her as president. Oh, I should keep you updated on something. You know how I told you? Bob gave me the ultimatum about the rats. Got to get the rats out. 48 hours, I'm calling pest control. Oh, I got a rat. Not only did I get a rat, the rat noises at night have stopped. Now, granted, Ob seems to be chafing. Ob sent me a text last night. She said, this is a direct quote. I'm reading this off my phone. Quote, I haven't heard the rats yet tonight. This is after I already killed one with one of my traps. I texted her right back. They're too afraid of me now. And she texted back. She rolled her eyes and said, just forget I said anything. And I texted her right back and I said, I won't forget. And neither will they. The rats are on the run now. They're not defeated yet. I heard some scratching. I'll be honest. I heard some scratching. They're still up there. But it's not just that I have a trap up. You didn't think Craven the Hunter was going to settle for one trap or one method. I have, as I mentioned, I have new traps. They're absolutely horrifying. I have them set up everywhere. In fact, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit worried that I'm going to step on one or grab one because I have so many around the house. And these traps, I'm pretty sure, can break a finger. But that's a small price to pay. When you're a hunter, when you're a hunter trapper, as I am, you can't fret about a broken finger or a mangled toe. The rats are on the run. Craven has done it. I want to thank you for the faith you put in me. I never doubted me. I know you never doubted me. I feel like there was some doubt from Ob, but obviously that is gone now. The rats, not defeated yet, but they're routing now. And now I'll run them down like grass and make an example of them. What, Chris? Anyway, I know the home's still going to be worth a lot because it's a home. Homes retain their value. Real estate retains its value. That's why you should get a hold of Done For You Real Estate. They won't get you a house with rats. They vet their houses. They find the best properties in the best cities, best markets for you. They handle the financing. They handle the closing process. They handle the rental process. I'm talking about generating tax-free income, consistent tax-free income. We're talking about stuff you can retire on one day and pass along to your kids. Done For You Real Estate is so normal people can begin investing in real estate. Go find out what they can do for you. They have changed lives. Go to doneforyoujesse.com. Doneforyoujesse.com. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Oracle.
You're going to love this one. It's a scream, baby.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is The Jesse Kelly Show. Final segment of The Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. I'll be back tomorrow. You can email the show, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 877-377-4373. Did you hear Mayorkas? Well, this is comforting.
China has, in fact, hacked into our telecommunications providers, some of them. And the extent of it is quite serious. And I should say that in response to that, we have taken action. We in the federal government has...
Wait till you hear the action.
Have stood up a unified coordination group, a multi-agency response to this hack. Just today, our cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency published mobile communications best practices that everyone should read, especially people in positions of responsibility in the United States government. It's a very...
We published in response to them hacking our telecommunications. We sent out a memo with best practices. We are in so much trouble. We are in a lot of very serious trouble. Jesse, I'm a deputy sheriff. I enjoyed listening to your podcast while I'm at work. Being the wordsmith and a world famous author like yourself, why can't you say the word across? You say it across with a T. I would have thought your radio coach would have corrected that by now. I brought the receipts, and actually he listed every single day and the exact moment in the show when I said that. He said, if you aren't sure what a cross is, ask Chris. He knows. One, that's hilarious. Two, look, I'm uneducated and stupid. I don't say a bunch of words right. I don't even know a bunch of words. I got a 0.0 grade point average my first semester of college. I shouldn't even be here. I have no room being here whatsoever. So if you're expecting some sort of lofty, heady radio with gigantic words, I just discovered litigious a while ago, and I've been using that one every single day as often as humanly possible. And you know what? Speaking of sounding smart, that's all you really need is one or two words. Kids, remember this. You don't actually have to be smart and well-read. Learn one or two big words and just use those all the time, and people will think you're well-read. That's one hack. And here's another hack. I do this all the time. And considering I keep running into you when I'm in the airport, maybe you'll notice this from now on. Always, always, when you travel, bring a book. Are you going to read it? Don't roll your eyes, Chris. Are you going to read it? No. Of course you're not going to read. You're going to play on your phone the whole time. But when people see you with a book, they automatically assume you're smarter than you actually are. Always carry a book. And then when you sit down at your gate or when you sit down on the plane and you want to play some more on your phone, you open the book, you put your phone in the book, and it looks like you're sitting there reading. Oh, what's that? Oh, what am I reading? Oh, you wouldn't like it. It's probably not for you. You always drop that on somebody. It's probably not for you. What are you really saying when you say that to somebody? You're telling them you're probably not smart enough to get this. That's what you're telling them. Oh, I forgot to tell you about this. I teased it the other night. I don't know why I'm telling you this now, but I'm telling you anyway. Something hurtful is happening. You know, parents always talk about in this day and age, I mean, how their kids don't want to leave. They're not independent. They don't want to grow up. They don't want driver's licenses. It's a major concern of parents today. Well, I don't know what we did in my house. Maybe we've just tormented them so much. We don't have that problem. The boys are dying to grow up. They're dying to be adults. They're dying to go out and adventure and be independent. So my oldest son, James, is driving now. He's got his driver's license. He's driving a car. And now he just gets in the car with his brother and they just take off. Hey, we're going to go get some Chick-fil-A. Hey, we're going to run down here. Hey, we're going to go do this. Okay, no big deal. He's independent. Sounds good. Go learn how to drive. The more the better. Then something really hurtful happened. They told Ab and I that they were going to go to the movies this Friday. And we said, oh, well, that's wonderful that they are close. I mean, it's nice to have brothers that are close. So, wow, that's really wonderful. That's precious. You guys are going to the movies together. Good for you guys. So yesterday or the day before, I forget, yesterday, day before, I asked them. Ab was there. It was me, the boys. And I said, hey, so just curious, why weren't we invited to the movies? And I was half joking. You know what they said? They said, oh, Chris was guessing that they said you're not cool. Oh, it's way more hurtful than that. They said, we don't want to go to the movies with you guys anymore. And we said, excuse me? Why? And they said that we laugh annoyingly during the previews at things that aren't funny. I don't laugh at not funny things during the previews. What are they even talking about? And I got this one from my youngest, from Luke. Luke drops this on us, and Ab is sitting there mortified. She's so, you don't want to hang out with us anymore? And then James comes up, and we're like, James, is this true? And James doesn't have any lying in him at all. It's just not who he is. He just gets this wincing look on his face, and he's all, yeah, guys. It's kind of true. You laugh a lot and it's really loud. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm 100% buying us 4 movie tickets soon when there's a new movie I don't want to see. And I'm going to laugh so loud and so often during the previews. They have no idea what they just opened up now. Oh, you thought it was annoying before, boys? Wait, now your time has come. Have you supported the IFCJ yet? You know that Israelis are dying. And they need your help. People need help. You don't think about it, but on the ground, people still need food. The emergency food is a big deal. People are going hungry. They don't have a place to stay. And probably more importantly, they need armor, body armor. They need armored ambulances. I can't believe that they need armored ambulances, but they do. That's how horrible things can be. Bomb shelters, help the IFCJ help them. Go to supportifcj.org or call 888-488-IFCJ.
And now,
here's a headline.
You know the thing.
I'm going to laugh so loud during the movies. I want to go, you know what I really want to do? Oh, this is what I'm going to do. I need to find out a subtle way to figure out what movie they're going to this Friday. And I'm going. And if I can, you know what? You know how covert I can be. Yeah, I can, Chris. I'm going to slip into the movies, and I'm going to sit right behind them. And the whole time, it's just going to be, it's just going to be the loudest thing at the quietest parts of the movie. When nothing funny even happens, it's just going to be, isn't that the funniest? These are my kids right here. Oh, I can't wait. Oh, I'm totally doing that. I'm doing it. This Friday, get ready, kids, because trouble's coming. Anyway, that's all.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.